and welcome to the Liars Club. I'm Felicia Michaels.
And I'm Jess Wellington.
And I'm David C. Smalley.
And what we do here at the Liars Club is we have one of our comedy pals come on. We ask them to tell two stories. One is the truth, one is a lie. And then we, as a team, try to figure out which one is the lie. Yeah. Jessica, would you please introduce our guest?
I'd be honored. I see him here all the time. His sets are amazing. He has an amazing podcast. We all know it. You know him from Glow. Most recently, I saw him on Reservation Dogs. That was a bit of a surprise.
Right.
Yeah, give it up for Mark Maron.
Give it up.
Wow, I just want to say, actually do a big shout out to my friend Jessica that got you on this fucking show. She will ask the devil anything within 5 minutes. That's how good Jessica is. Thank you for doing the show, Mark.
Well, I don't mind doing these things. I've known you forever, and I see her all the time, and I love this place. But yeah. I don't do a lot of things. But it was, the problem with someone from the Comedy Store asking me to do a show is that if I don't, then I'm that guy. Then she's going to look at me like, all right, so I guess you're just too busy?
No. I mean, if you just respond, like Santino was like, no, thanks. I was like, well, thanks for the response.
You should get him on because he's a liar.
Yeah.
Really?
He's one of the best liars because he likes to fuck with people. Right?
Yeah.
He'll tell you shit and you'd be like, really? And then you walk out into the world and people are like, what are you talking about?
Santino,
one of those guys.
That's my personal pet peeve when you go out with someone and they do that to you all the time because I fall for every lie.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
And then they're like, no, this is what happened. And then you totally believe it and they're just fucking with you.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate it. Yeah, it's the worst because I'm a sucker.
Remember when Billen was filling me full of that right wing stuff and I was going back to you saying about all the.
Yes,
and you were like, please stop listening to him.
Don't listen to a Canadian comedian telling you about the politics of our country. Yeah. God bless him.
This whole industry of lies.
You know, I was going through your Instagram and I saw you had posted in December a picture of Sparky.
I know. And I was asking about Sparky.
Yeah. Did you ever find out about Sparky?
No one there. I don't know what happened to Sparky or Rod.
Yeah.
They're both in that picture. Ralph is dead.
Yeah.
But Sparky was around, man.
Yeah.
And I have no idea.
Like, well, he went and did you know, when they have a hurricane and the government comes in and fixes things. Yeah. What is that program?
FEMA.
He works as a contractor, I think, for FEMA. Alan Stevens told me that.
Oh, so,
yeah,
he just
so he's well.
Eased into life.
Yes, he's well.
He was here with us during the hurricane of the Kennison years.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Crazy.
It was crazy.
It's weird to be in the basement of the Comedy Store because this was, you know, it used to be where the ghosts lived.
Yeah.
I heard.
They probably still do.
I heard.
Now they're gone. They left.
Where people did coke or they wanted to finger someone. This is where they brought you.
Was it available for that? Because there was.
Yes.
There were so many rooms upstairs.
What, you had to book it? You had to book it?
The pros came down here, Mark.
But there was just like a gate up there. I thought it just had a drop off. But I mean, like, why? There were so many caverns upstairs you could fuck in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
All right.
I was telling someone the other day, and they were about, I was hired here for a day when I was first made a regular, but it was to answer the phones. And I got fired the first day.
Yeah.
But it was such a crazy time. And when I saw you in that picture, it just reminded me how you used to dress and walk around like a fucking school shooter. You know what I mean?
He's kind of dressed that way today.
Full circle.
Yeah.
I'm back.
Yeah.
Well, I had that sweater. I'm doing a joke about that picture, actually, because, you know, that sweater, there are clothes that you have in your life that you wore all the time, every day for years. Then one day you're like, what the fuck happened to that sweater? That was a great sweater, you know? And I have this jacket. That's not the joke.
That's great. No, it's good. You know,
but it's part of a joke.
Okay.
But I like that sweater in that picture.
Trust me, you guys, he's funny.
Yeah.
No, I am. But I was holding something, and it was a Polaroid. Do you remember Ralph used to have? Well, he wouldn't have shown you.
Yeah.
He used to have a stack of Polaroids of women blowing him.
And no.
Yeah, it was before phones. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, like.
I didn't think his arm would be long enough over that belly.
Oh, wow. it was the weirdest thing.
Oh, wow.
When they were all hookers, but you know, he was very excited about it.
When I was thinking on you today about you coming on the podcast, I thought to myself, there are two people in comedy that I kind of knew from the beginning mostly that really made me believe that anything is possible in the most genuine way. And that was Mitch Hedberg and you. You know, like sweet. After Mitch died, I went to a Starbucks like the next day. And you know how they used to always put the quotes up in chalk, and there was like an Oscar Wilde quote. And above it, they were writing a Hedberg quote. And I thought to myself, yes, this is how it should be, that, you know, his words will have a memory. And it really struck home for me. But what also, when it comes to you, is when you interviewed Obama on your podcast, it was like just knowing you from the beginning and how rough it was for you here at the Comedy Store, and to see your life just go in that direction. It's like, I know everyone always makes fun of comics being like jealous, and but no, you get happy for people. Like,
it's not like I didn't earn it. No one's gonna say about me like that fucking guy. He didn't do anything to get to where he is. Well, I posted the on the Instagram too, the picture of me and Obama, and that picture of me and Sam. That was what was crazy in that same sweater, though. What happened then?
What happened to that damn sweater?
In that same sweater.
I wore two things here.
Can you still fit in that sweater, you think? Okay, good.
Nice big Ralph Lauren sweater, actually. But it looked good. It was beat up. But those pictures side by side are crazy.
It's an amazing thing.
I am coked out of my brain. You know,
with Obama.
You beat me to it,
With Kinison, obviously.
With Obama, I was on just coffee.
Oh, yeah. That must have been... how scary was that to interview Obama? I mean,
it seems like he'd be pretty cool, though. Like, he kind of put you at ease.
Oh, yeah. No, he was definitely... He did that. What's weird about it was... It wasn't like an interview that I usually do, because we had to really kind of prepare and break it down. And, you know, we had an hour and that was it. But leading up to it was crazy, because you have like a dozen Secret Service guys that come a couple weeks before. You've got like his staff, and, you know, you have to tent the driveway. They have to secure a perimeter. There were snipers on my neighbor's roof. I mean, that was crazy. You know, once he got there, it was fine. But it was a little intense leading up to it. But I don't remember being terribly nervous. I was more nervous about getting all this stuff done, because that's not really how I do it.
You have to submit your questions in advance.
No, he didn't. He, you know, he's not afraid. You know, he can handle himself. You know, so they didn't. We had final edit, and we had final edit on the questions. Managing the aftermath was the trickiest part. And my producer Brendan, who's like a news guy originally. Was very good at that, because he said the N-word on the air, you know, like in context, and that was big news. And I had people hanging around out in front of my house. But Brendan was like, we're doing two interviews. We promised Terry Gross a post interview and Chris Hayes, and that's it. And you just don't even engage. And it was brilliant that we managed that thing.
More importantly, though, how did your cats react to all that?
Well, that
in
was
the house.
Thing. It was kind of funny, because they have to bring a dog in to do the bomb sniffing of my little house. You know, and when they showed up with the dog, I'm like, dude.
It's a cat house.
Yeah, cats in there. We're not going to do the dog thing. They're like, all right, we'll just go check it out. I'm like, so, okay.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't do the dog thing.
You know what's funny? I'm going to bring David in on this. Is I was in New York a couple months ago, and I ran into David at Cat's Deli, and then we walked around to go look at, what was the name of that place? Luna Lounge. It's gone. And I was like, this is the place.
Yeah.
And I always remember, and I'm sorry if I'm being this person, but I always remember the moment when I saw your comedy change was in Luna Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where I was like, whoa, this is like a whole different level now. What is your goal, comedy-wise, for the next level? Do you ever...
Well, I mean, what happened with Luna, like after this place, I'm able to watch my stuff, my old spots and stuff, like Evening at the Improv from 89 and stuff, you know, a year or so after I left here. And I don't think... I always thought that was totally different, but I'm not that different. But what Luna did was... And it was alternative comedy for me was really just a place to go and work out in a way that I couldn't work out in a club.
There was no pressure.
Well, yeah. And I was, you know, I'm a regular comedy club act. That's where I come from. I'm not like, I paid my dues in the right places. But alternative was sort of built around me, not unlike podcasting in a similar way. Like I used to go up at Luna and just go off. you know, I was bitter. I was, you know, angry.
Yes, you went through a bitter phase. I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I assumed at that time that everybody was secretly bitter and that they should be able to relate to this if I can just get through to them. But that's not really true. And a lot of people were just, you know, kind of sad I was so angry. But it was entertaining. But that's where I figured out how to have that kind of freedom of mind on stage. So yeah. That's what shifted.
Being going through all these decades of comedy, though, it is, to me, you stand out, too, because you have grown with the ages.
Yeah, and also I don't have kids, and, you know, I'm sort of an emotionally fucked up guy.
Yeah, me too.
Well, there's a timelessness to that. Okay. You know, there's a timelessness to that. Like, you know, a lot of guys my age are fat. They have kids. They have wives. They don't want. So their engagement with the world is different. Mine is still sort of heady and kind of, you know, subjective, but it's not burdened by normal expectations. So I think it's easier for me to keep going. I'm grateful that I'm still somewhat relevant and not just an old guy, but it's only a matter of time.
Do you have any goals set for yourself still that you want to achieve?
I do. I mean, I just did this HBO special that'll be out around the time you release this on the 11th.
Okay, great.
And, you know, it's probably my fifth or sixth hour, and it's pretty good. I mean, like, you know, it dealt with stuff that I didn't think I could deal with, like, you know, Lynn Shelton's death, who I was, you know, seeing at the time. And it dealt with a lot of stuff that is not easy comedically, but, you know, but I did it. And I really have a heart, like, it's so funny because it happened not the other night where she did it twice, actually. And I'm not talking shit about Eliza, but like she respects me and I respect her. But she goes, you know, maybe you should do like a one-man show or something. I'm like, dude. I'm a fucking comic. I'm not an alt guy. I'm just specific. You know, not all of us have to just yell, you know, over people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's just I'm always up against this interpretation of what I do as being something other than stand up. But it's stand up.
Yeah, it's stand up.
Yeah, and it just always annoys me. Like, you're a storyteller. It's stand up. You know, I get it, but. Goals, I don't know, man. I thought I was going to take a few weeks off, and I didn't. I'm just back, and I'm doing new shit. You know, I'm trying to, you know.
Your new stuff about your dad is really funny.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's so funny.
It's crazy. Thanks. I mean, it's like, it seems like it might be a gift that keeps giving.
Yeah.
But you know who else did a lot of stuff about his dad with dementia was Chris Garcia, and it was very funny. But it is what it is. But thank you. So, I don't know. Goals are to become a better actor, I think, and to... gradually ease out of the compulsive kind of race that is comedy and show business.
Right.
To not dictate my life.
But you
life
need
so much.
To be on stage.
I think so.
I think you're one of those people.
But I don't want to have expectations around it anymore. Like this special, like I've done, like the last two specials are about as good as I can get. And, you know, and people enjoyed them. You know, but it was a little bit of everything I do, you know, poking at, you know, Christians and culture and you know, personal stuff. And it was really representative of the best I can do. And I'm not going to be an arena act. So, like, I'm just not going to put pressure on myself anymore, or judge myself against people that, you know, have different careers than me, because that still happens.
That is like, if anyone is listening, no matter what career you are in, but for comics specifically, that is great advice, don't judge yourself by what other people have at the moment and what you do or do not have.
Well, it's crazy because it's complete insecurity,
mm-hmm.
because what you're overlooking is what you do have.
Yeah.
And like, why isn't that enough? Or are you even assessing it properly?
Right.
And do you really want what that other person has? You know, I believe that overall, and not being a religious person, that, you know, I always get exactly what I can handle. And, you know, whatever opportunities I didn't get in the past, I couldn't have handled. Because when I did get them, I fucked them up.
You did get a lot of opportunities, Mark.
How many comics have interviewed Obama? You're going to always have that.
Yeah, I do. I do. I will always have me and Obama. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to the stories. You have two stories.
Yeah, they're sort of a part one and part two.
Okay.
But, you know, I guess I'm probably doing it a little differently than most people
do. Yeah, go
figure.
Mark would make it weird.
There,
story of his life.
Well, one part of it is totally true.
Okay.
And one part of it is, you know, mostly true.
Okay, and they're split into two pieces. So you'll go like part one, and you'll be like, okay, this is part two?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, this is part one. This is like, you know, but and again, what?
Yeah, no, go ahead. You're not going to say this is the true one, right?
No.
Okay, because sometimes people do that.
Because they're all sort of framed in a series of events that took place at this place around the time that Sam's HBO special, Sam Kennison's HBO special, premiered.
God, the fact that you even have a memory of that time is a miracle.
So, what happened was...
Okay, so this is the story.
Right. The night of his HBO taping, or not taping, but they were going to watch it. It was premiering, right? It was on HBO.
Watch party.
And everyone's going to go to this watch party at Carl LeBeau's house. And I wasn't invited. I don't know why. And I didn't know if I was going.
I think we know why.
I was hanging around them. I wasn't on the inner circle. But there's a couple of funny things in this story, but it'll lead up to. Okay. So I'm hanging around here, and, you know, I'm like, you know, out in the parking lot, and I'm like, I'm not going to this party, I guess. And then Belzer comes up in that Eldorado he used to drive. He's like, what's going on? I'm like, well, I wanted to go to Sam's party, but I guess I'm not going. He goes, let's just go over there. So me and the Bells are in his Eldorado.
Because they lived in an apartment kind of.
Yeah, over there.
Yeah.
It was Christy and Carl's apartment. Yeah. And so Bells, we got to get in the Bells' car. And you remember he used to call his pot the hammer? He's like, I got the hammer. So we get all high and we're driving over to Carl's house. And we're pulling up to the apartment. And Sam's crossing the street with some woman like this. She was a sad one. And Belzer just... Belzer just guns the Eldorado and comes right up on Sam, and Sam didn't know it was him. And he's like, what the fuck? You know, and he jumps back and he runs around to the driver's side window and he goes, oh, it's you. And Belzer says, yeah, I did that to Belushi. Look what happened to him. All right, so.
But I love that because you guys have to understand the chemistry of the Comedy Store at that time.
So we get to this. I get to this party. Everyone's gacked. Everyone's jammed. You know, it's like Carl and that crew, and everyone's trying to behave because there's, you know, that weird. Who's that weird manager that one of them had? Elliot. You remember Elliot?
I remember Majid. That was
the drug deal.
Yeah, I remember that guy.
Oh, Felicia. We just learned more about you. Yeah. That's good.
No,
that's
I was good. On the out circle out. I was not one
she
of
was
the.
Just one circle out from me.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
But we get there. And the funny thing is, because
my addiction layers. Didn't keep me where you were.
They had bought all this fucking sushi. Like there was like $1,000 worth of sushi that no one was touching because everyone was coked up.
Because it sits out.
They were just too coked up. Yeah. They were just no one.
That's $3,000 worth of sushi now.
All right. So here's what happens. So that goes down. So that happens. That party happens. But then, you know, we all end up later back here, and Sam wants to keep the party going. So I live up at Crest Hill, right? So they show up with all of Sam's guitars. Carl and Sam have all this equipment because they play guitar, I play guitar, and they wanted to jam up at Crest Hill. And fucking, like, it used to be like, do you remember Ted Nugent used to hang around?
Yes.
So, like, when we were up at the house partying, if Nuge was going to come over, no Coke was allowed because Nuge was clean. Okay. But this night, it was fucking, do you remember Clapton showed up here one night?
No.
It was Clapton and Phil Collins. It was crazy. And I remember because I shook Clapton's hand and like everyone was around, Sam was around, and I dropped to my knees and I was like, I touched the hand, you know, and Sam was like embarrassed, and, like, and I don't even think it was
you
the
really fell
hand.
To your knees.
Yes, it was. You know, but anyway, so we're gonna have this party, and again, we can't, you know, party because apparently Clapton is gonna come up there and jam. Okay. At Crest Hill. Right. So we set the guitars, you know, they set up all the amps and all this shit, and we're gonna do it on the deck of Crest Hill. And we and Sam and Carl and this crew, the usual crew, comes up, and we didn't know if Clapton was going to show up, but he actually shows up for like he didn't hang out that long because it was awkward because Sam made everything awkward. But he came out and he played with those guys. I couldn't play, of course. And then he, I don't know where he went.
What do you mean you couldn't play, of course?
Because there was only a certain amount of guitars and, you know, Sam was trying to impress Eric and all this shit. So they play one tune and then Eric was like, you know, humble and we wanted to do drugs and he splits. And then I tried to play with him and it got a little ugly because I couldn't keep up with Carl and Sam and I was embarrassed on guitar. But then they all leave and all the guitars are at the house. So they put them. I have all the equipment at the house, all right, and I don't really know what to do with it, so we put it all in my room. And I lock my room up, and they go, and now it's just me at Cresto with whatever losers are up there. So that happens. So that's the first half of the story.
Well,
so all someone took all the guitars from this area to your place.
Well, they brought they Sam brought his gear over.
Sam
so,
took it
yeah,
back.
But they went and partied, you know. Okay. Eric had gone, so but wherever they went, as usual, I wasn't invited. So it was just me, a couple of loser comics with all of Sam's equipment, which we eventually took the equipment out and started playing. And I cut my hand. I bled all over his guitar. But that is only set up for the next part. So I put all the guitars and all the equipment in my bedroom.
Part two.
The safe
second story.
Second story. This is like the next day or 2 days later.
Well, now, let's. Let's discuss the first part of the story. Number one, who were the comics at the Crest Hill?
The loser
living
comics?
There?
Yeah.
When I was there, it was, Todd. Todd.
The Todd.
The Todd lived over, he was in the one room. And then I was in Dice's old room.
Right.
And Tamayo was still kind of upstairs.
Oh, wow.
And that's why a lot of times Sam would come up there so he could yell it, you know, just like bang on her door because they were broken up or you know, half and half.
Yeah.
So we would be up there partying for 3 days straight and he'd eventually be like, Tamayo! You know, it was.
Was your room like downstairs?
There's
like
the one off the kitchen, with the bathtub.
All right.
Yeah. Downstairs, I think, do you remember Todd, the sound guy? He had a wife.
Uh-huh.
And they were kind of there.
Oh, really?
And I can't remember. And Schubert was living there briefly in the front room.
Yeah.
But I can't remember who was in the upstairs room across from Tamayo's room. Because it was so funny, man.
It's crazy. Even now, just talking about Cresto reminds me of me going there. And there was some huge party. But it was not like a, hey, party. It was everyone was in this dark around the table.
Yeah.
And Sam was at the head of it, and all these comics were around it, and he was throwing out 20s, like, someone go get me a Coca-Cola!
Well,
and like 20 comics would be like, oh, I'm getting that Coke, because they wanted that money.
Well, that was sort of my job, is on Mondays, that was the no cover night, so that's when it got crazy, do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
That was crazy when Sam was here, because like all of porn would converge, all of fucking hair metal would converge, all the creepy fucking...
Billy Idol was here a couple times.
It was crazy.
Everybody was here.
And he would come up to me when he got there and give me like $300 and go, you know, go set up Crest Hill. So I would have to go down to the fucking Pink Dot or the 7-Eleven and buy a bunch of pints, bunch of cigarettes, bunch of mixers, and I'd stash them all over Crest Hill because I knew eventually we'd need more.
Let me just for the people who may not know what Crest Hill is, it's like a house where a bunch of comics lived.
Crest Hill was Mitzi owned it. It was behind the Comedy Store up on the hill, and it was like a Spanish style house, but it was not in great condition.
Well, she kept trying to do things, but she didn't know what animals lived there. I
remember
one time we can't. She would paint things and fix the kitchen, and we were like, "What's that?" Like, she bought all this fancy patio furniture, this rattan patio furniture that I think we actually started to burn in the fireplace.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, comics ruin it for everyone.
Oh, it was a fundamental lack of respect for anything.
It's the one behind the sign up the hill, right? Or no,
it's over to. Over more. It's not directly behind the sign.
Yeah,
it's over
like,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you could hear the music down here when we were playing up there because people said that.
Yeah.
And we ordered from that Italian place. Okay, so anyway, second part of the story.
Okay,
part
two.
Unless anyone has a question about the first part of the story. We good?
I think I'm good for now.
Okay.
All right. So a couple days later, you know, things, you know, they went where, I don't remember what the day trip, what it was, but there used to be this guy that hung around the store, right? His name was Dave London. All right. Dave London, I can only picture him as Christopher Walken. He looked kind of like Christopher Walken. He was just one of these weirdos that hung around. And he was a Satanist, right? And he was kind of creepy. He was a heroin junkie guy, but he was around. Like, he would show up for shows. One night he showed up with Angie Bowie, like David Bowie's ex-wife. Yeah, who's a little, you know. But, you know, he was, I don't know what his deal was, but
I don't know,
Mark,
what's a little, I don't know, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, like, she was kind of a drug addict and kind of a freak, you know, because I interviewed her son, who doesn't speak to her, and there's usually a reason for that.
Yeah.
So, okay, so Sam, of course, being the beast, doesn't like Dave London, doesn't like him around. It's like Sam had problems with odd people. Like, Sam couldn't stand Don Barris. Out of all the people, Don didn't even have a pot to piss in, but he annoyed Sam.
Really?
Oh yeah, it was crazy, dude.
Wow.
Like there were a lot of like reconciliations. When I remember, you remember Steve Pearl when he used to hang around? Like he would never come up to the house at the beginning. Eventually, everyone ended up there.
Mm-hmm.
But Pearl used to say, like, "Were you going up to the house to listen to how Sam invented the printing press?"
Yes. And that is, he nailed it. He nailed it with that statement.
I know. Well, it's kind of like how when Chappelle comes here then, and everybody's right behind him.
No, it's different.
No, you know? It's different because it was different. So cocaine.
Well, I'm sure, yeah, you got a lot more freedom.
And Sam was like, honestly, when you were around Sam Kinison and all that cocaine, you were like, I get why the Germans did what Hitler wanted. Like, it was like some like mass hypnosis with comedy and cocaine. Yeah. I'm not exaggerating,
no,
right, Mark?
No, because he's like, like, he had that preacher thing going.
Yeah.
And he would always say that, like, you know, you're going to take 8 years off of, you know, he'd say he's going to save you time. He's going to help you out. All he's doing is taking years off your life.
Yeah.
Like, he put, like, he put out a warning on me. He, like, fucked me after all this shit that I'm about to tell you went down. So, all right. So, Dave London. We established Dave London. So, now, here we are. We're going back to the house, right? And it must be a couple days later. I've set everything up. There's booze and shit. And I remember the people that were left, you know. Now, the backstory to this part is, like, my buddy Bill's coming to town. He's never been out here. He's going to come visit me. And I've sort of told him what's up, right? He's flying in from Boston. So the party's up there. We're going. You know, it's like the weirdest fucking people ended up there. I don't want to do it on mic, but it was like, but it's one woman who was there who you would never have thought to have been there, and she never did drugs again afterwards. But okay, so so here's what's happening. The party after the whatever goes on down here, it must have been a Monday, ends up there. So it's like, you know, remember Little George who used to book the place?
Yeah.
I'm a little confused about the timeline. So I thought, so part one ended with you, you guys were at Chris Hill.
And all that we've established here, timeline-wise, is the guitars are still in my room.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the important part of the story.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Got it?
Got it.
Okay. So the party comes. So everyone's up there, and Dave London shows up. Now, Dave London is, like, you know, the Satanist junkie guy. Sam hates him. And he's nothing. He's nobody, but he's on Sam's radar. And he's got, like, a pentagram tattooed over his heart.
Aww.
And he's got, like, the mark of the beast, all this bullshit. But he's this lanky dude. He's not a very threatening guy. But Sam hates him. So the party's going on, and, you know, Sam's holding court, and there's a lot of people there.
Ugh.
And Coke is out. And out of nowhere, you know, London, you know, just, like, says across the table, like, I'm going to tell Anton LaVey about you. You know, like, you're not the real beast. Like, Anton LaVey was the head of the Satanic Church. He was a carny, basically, running a racket. But he had a little... So he basically tells Sam that he's going to report him to Anton LaVey, which was, it was, like, ridiculous, this dueling Satanist. So so then Sam, like, throws a drink in the guy's face and pops him. That was Sam's way. You know,
his way?
Well, if he was going to fight, he was going to cold cock you and blindside you. Like, you know, he was going to do a little... He wasn't a real fighter guy.
Right.
So he pops London, right? And it's chaos. And, you know, and Dave's, like, freaking out. And I don't know what to do with the guy because he wasn't going to leave. And I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, this is... You got to get out of his face. And this is how I remember He's like, well, I'm not fucking leaving. I'm like, well, fine. So I put him in the room, my room, and I lock him in there because you can lock him in the
heroin addict?
Yeah, in my room.
You locked Sam in there?
No, I locked Dave
in there. The heroin addict with all the guitars.
With the guitars, yeah.
Oh, no.
And then, like, I go to the airport to LAX to pick up Bill, right?
Uh-huh.
So I leave, and I leave him, like, I think I'm going to come back, right? I think I'm going to come back. But I ended up, like, I pick up Bill, and I'm like, we can't go back there right now, man. It's, like, crazy, and I'm tired. I haven't slept in 2 days. I'm just going to crash at your hotel with you, right? So I go to Bill's hotel, and we fucking, you know, we hang out, and I probably had blow. But we ended up, like, not going back.
And there's no, like, cell phone, so there's, like, no way of him knowing where you are or how to get a hold of you.
So here's what happens. So we go back the next day. It's, like, 8 or 9 in the morning, and we show up at the house, and I walk in. I'm showing him Crest Hill Bill. And then we walked through the kitchen to where my bedroom is, and the door had been kicked down, and my bed's all weird and fucked up. All the equipment's gone, okay? And we walk into the where the table is, right? And there's, like, it's Sam and this
They're
woman.
Still there.
There's four people there. That's all that's left. They're still there.
And you're saying the door to your room had been kicked down. Okay.
And it's Sam, and maybe Carl, and, you know, and oddly, Larry Scirano. really that kind of guy.
Yeah.
And this woman who you would never anticipated, and they're there, and I walk in, and Sam's just looking at me, you know, cutting coke.
Was it Roseanne?
No. Okay. No.
No, I would have thought that would have been.
No, and me and Bill walk in, and Sam just looks at me and goes, "I pissed on your bed, Maren."
Oh, this story.
You want to know why? And and I go, "Yeah, I do." He goes, "Because you let that Satanist sleep with my guitars." And according to Schubert, I turned to Bill and I said, "I told you I knew him."
Well,
and that was after that. I lost my mind, and
you
I
had
left.
You had to leave. I mean, we all know that Sam peed on your bed.
But the Magid story—that's funny. The addendum to this is like when I lost my mind and he kicked me out of the group. Is Magid the coke dealer?
The coke dealer, yeah.
Like, I'm out in the parking lot, I'm breaking glasses, I'm having a meltdown, and Schubert's like, "Just be cool, man." And I'm like, "Fuck you, you're part of it, you know." And because I was hallucinating at this time, I was psychotic. Wow. And Magid comes up to me, and I'm like, "Dude, what am I going to do? I'm kicked out of the group."
Yeah.
And Magid goes, "You got to go, man."
That would be some Magid advice right there.
But, right, but if the coke dealer tells you to leave.
You got to leave.
You got to leave. I backed up, I paid my debts. Gave Rod a bunch of shit and left. So that's the two-part story.
Where did you go to live? You left the whole...
I went to Boston, I thought.
Well, I drove to the desert, you know, like out of my... Like, I was hearing voices and shit. I was way gone. And my brother was in Tucson. I didn't really know what to do. So I just drove to Tucson. And he was graduating college. I remember seeing a car accident. Everything... I thought everything had mystical importance. And that, like, it was always a sign.
Yeah.
And but I get to Tucson. My brother's like, "Oh, I'm graduating this week." I'm like, "I got to pull out, man. I got to quit doing the blow." He's like, "But we're graduating." So I hung out there with him for a few days. Then I went home and immediately renewed my passport because I thought I would have to run. And then I cleaned up the first time. Went into rehab for a month.
You make me feel a lot better about my little breakdowns. It's nothing.
I went to rehab for a month, then went to Boston.
Right.
But I didn't stay sober for a long time.
Well, I mean, I once went over to Carl's and Christie when after 3 days those guys had been going at it. And like when you see people after 3 days with no sleep, all coked up.
And you're not anything. You're well rested.
Yeah. I didn't have because I do like a little freeze on. But that would be it. It wasn't my thing. You know, you stay up till 5 a.m. You write a letter to your dad of all the wrongs that he did. And then you're like, okay, cured. I'm cured with this. It wasn't really my thing. But
isn't it harder to stay up on? I don't know. I did meth in high school.
Uh-huh.
So I know it's easy to
have
stay
a lot of. You have to have a lot of coke, and there was a lot of coke.
Yeah, you got
to
have a lot.
And then a lot of drinking too. It got pretty weird and creepy up there. Like Becker, Mitzi's assistant, used to call us the Manson family.
Yeah, it was pretty.
It was out there, dude. And there was like
a lot of manipulation going on. I remember once Sam invited everyone to go get Thai food, and then he invited me, and I was like, you know, outside the circle that was outside, and that I ended up paying for it because he's like, "Oh, I don't have any money," because that was Sam. And then, but it's like, wow. And I was stripping at the time, and I was just like, wow, you know I'm stripping, and you can take my stripper money for your fucking friends.
Yeah. He's a monster.
Yeah.
He was a full monster. Like, I waited all my life. All I wanted to do was get a video of me peeing on his grave. And I shot Reservation Dogs in Tulsa.
I was going to say, is it worth to go to Tulsa just to do that?
I was there, and I went to his fucking grave. And I forgave him. I didn't pee.
You did.
Look at you've grown.
And that's the lie, right?
Right.
At this point in my life, if I was to show anybody me pissing on Sam's grave, it'd be like, "What's wrong with you?"
Yeah, that would be weird. Yeah.
Too much time has passed now.
Obama calls you up, like, "Let it go, brother."
I need you to delete that episode.
Wow. So two parts of the story. So we have to figure out of those two.
Well, you just
stories,
said that we all know that.
Yeah, but maybe that's.
There's a big lie.
There's a big lie within it.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I figured it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have? Do you want
to? I have it.
All right. Let's do the recap.
I'll do the recap. So the night of Sam Kinison's premiere, they were all going back to Carl's house. Mark wasn't invited. He wasn't cool enough. So he's at the Comedy Store in the parking lot hanging out. Belzer comes up, says, "Hey, let's get high. Let's go to Carl's." So they go. They all end up back, or they all go, and then they end up back at the Comedy Store. They go to Crest Hill, and they're at Crest Hill with Sam and his guitars. They wanted to do Coke, but Eric Clapton may show up, so they're not sure if they should do it or not. Clapton does show up, shakes his hand, he goes to his knee.
I thought you were fine doing Clapton. Coke with Clapton.
No, he's a clean guy. He's clean, okay. So they weren't going to do it if he was coming.
But so you said Ted Nugent was going to show up.
Right.
No, Ted Nugent had been up there before, but he's okay. Also clean. So yeah. Whether it was Nugent or Clapton, yeah. We all had to behave.
So Clapton shows up, and then he leaves. They all left the guitars in Mark's room in Crest Hill. That's the end of part one.
Okay.
Part two, a couple days later, Dave London, a guy who was a weirdo who hung around the Comedy Store. He was a Satanist. Sam didn't like him. Mark's buddy Bill is coming into town. That'll be important in a moment. Dave London, the Satanist, tells Sam Kennison he's going to report him to the leader of the Satanists, which I always thought was Satan. Apparently he wasn't. Sam throws a drink at Dave London, punches him in the face. They get into it. Mark, to I guess cool out the situation, locks Dave London in his own room where the guitars are. Then Mark goes to get Bill from the airport, ends up crashing at Bill's hotel. They go to Crest Hill the next day. Mark's door had been kicked in. Sam says, "I pissed on your bed, Marin. Because you let that Satanist sleep."
So your door...
I never slept in the bed again. I just want to make sure we know.
Okay.
I'm nobody's bitch.
That so mattress is probably still up there.
Your door locked from the outside?
It did, yeah. There was a
so bolt. Why was it kicked in?
What do you mean?
Well, he just been kicked in. I took it as
so
kicked
down.
So
was it like
down.
A key that they had to have?
No,
to be
no.
Able...
Like it had one of those bolts. You close it and then bolt it, and someone had kicked it in.
But why would they need to kick it in if they were on the outside? They could have just unlocked it and went in.
No. The key goes into the outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
so it kicked in, not kicked out. Kicked
right.
in.
No, Dave was in there, apparently. He must have still been in
yeah. there. Well, so let's methodically go through this. The guitars, I don't know if that can be a lie because he did mention the guitars in the first story
I
and the second
true.
Story. So that part... has to be true, mm-hmm.
yes.
But maybe it's not true the reason why Sam pissed on his bed. Mm. So that's one thing, right?
I don't know. That sounds good to me.
I play this all straight now, right?
Yeah. Yes.
This is you guys do this.
This is us battling. Yeah.
This is how
yeah.
this goes?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
But we are
simple.
Watching
We're
you
no
in
geniuses.
Case you give any tells.
This is our detective
yeah.
work.
This is our detective work. But then, or Dave the Satanist could be the lie, because it could be maybe... someone else. Maybe it wasn't Dave the Satanist.
Mark could have done something else to cause the pissing on the bed.
That's true. Mark could have done something else to go pick up your...
Sure, like there's a lot of reasons a guy will piss on your bed.
But I don't... I mean, maybe the thing is spending the night with his friend from who flew in, because to me, Mark didn't have a lot of money. Like, why would he do his own coke at his with his friend when he would... if I know... the scene back then, you would have been like, let's go get that free coke.
Mm.
You know?
Well, I got a story about going to get
and if you have
Magid.
Oh, I bet you do. I bet you do.
That was one of the best things I ever saw in my life.
Probably the worst. Anyway. So what do you think?
I'm going to say I think the lie is Clapton. I don't think Clapton showed up.
Oh, it could be that.
He did the whole thing about Clapton, said he shook his hand, he went down to one knee, and Sam was embarrassed. He said one big lie. I think
but
Clapton is the lie.
In those times, though, people did show up. But then he said Ted Nugent, and then he said Clapton. I never saw Clapton here, but I saw Ted Nugent here quite a lot. But it wouldn't be any big shock if Clapton was
not for him to meet, him to meet any of these people, but that just stood out to me. I don't know why.
I still can't get past the door, to be honest with you. Because first he said, no, it's just one of the little things. And then he's like, no, it's a key. And then that was like the deadbolt key.
When he first said kicked in, I thought Dave London had kicked the door out to get out. So did Sam kick the door in to get to Dave, or did Dave kick the door out?
Sam kicked it in. Okay. How long does this part go on for?
Yeah.
It's almost over. We just have to get to,
We just have to figure it out.
And then we're all going to kind of vote. We're all going to vote, and then you're going to tell us.
Oh, you vote.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to vote, and then you'll tell us.
We're going
to
vote in a few more minutes. Your pain is almost over.
You know why he's asking that? Because he's already heard the correct answer, and it's Clapton, and he wanted to be like, David's right.
Oh, you think that's...
That's why he's asking.
So you think the first part of the story is the lie?
I think the Clapton piece is the big lie. But I think some of that stuff
piece
happened.
Was expressively said during the first part or also the second part?
It was said during the first part, but I don't think the entire first part is a lie. I think the first part is mostly true, and the big lie within the story is Clapton. I don't think Clapton ever showed up.
You know, as I'm sitting here, you know who I keep thinking about who did the podcast? Richard Pryor Jr.
I know, me too.
Okay, I know.
I know.
Richard Pryor Jr. did the podcast, and he was, this is what I'm going to tell you,
that
he was
story.
One of the door guys, the not parking lot.
Not for long.
And then he...
all fucked up on Magic's Coke, and he was hanging out up there.
Yeah, and he said that he, you know, did Kinison in the, you know...
Had sex with him.
Yeah.
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 Oh, you're confirming. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And that was.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, but I always say, like, as a little sideline, like, yeah, those guys did so much coke. They'll do anything for a feeling. Yeah.
When I asked Carl LeBeau, like, after, you know, Christy, his wife, had Sam's kid posthumously. When I asked Carl,
what the fuck does posthumously mean?
After he died.
She had his kid.
It was
I asked him, yeah. I said, well, you guys all fucking each other then? He's like, not then. I'm like, all right,
you know, I had a come to Jesus moment with Carl because I was very upset with, because, you know, when you're a girl comic, you're friends with the guy comics. And at that time, there were mostly men comics. And you were also friends with their lovers and wives.
Sure.
Of course, it's very natural to do that. And I didn't know what was going on because I had moved to New York or did something where I went to go meet Christio's Princeton.
Catch,
right. And so she had moved out there.
Yeah.
And I went to go visit her, and I had never seen the baby. And then we went to a park. We're going to meet in a park. And then the baby started running towards us. And I was, I'm sure she's a beautiful girl, you know, because for sure. But I was very angry for a long time with Carl for putting Christy through that, because if anyone was around Christy at that time, people had a lot of problems, not just her. A lot of people had problems.
You mean by cutting her off and not paying?
Well, just by, because a child was involved. I was very angry about that. And then one time Alan Stevens took me aside and said, you need to start considering that maybe Carl was a victim too.
Right.
And that really hit home with me because there was so much craziness around that. And Sam was so charismatic and so able to mesmerize a person. It was like getting hypnotized.
And it was true because Carl was like the good cop to his bad cop. And Carl was certainly an extension of Sam. I mean, he did that whole amazing bit, The Adventures of Red West, Elvis's best friend.
Yes.
It's the greatest bit in the world.
Yeah.
But it's real shit, man. You know, but he was always operating. I remember one time, like, those guys were the same. You know, Carl was the public face of Sam's weirdness.
Yeah.
You know, he made it okay.
Yeah.
I remember one time, I used to live at Crest Hill, so I'd come down here to make coffee. I was down here during the day listening.
Making the terrible
No, just for myself. And I'd go into the OR and listen to my new CDs and shit. Like, an extension of my house. And I remember I was just down here in the parking lot, you know, during the day, and Christy rolls up in this new RX-7 or whatever the fuck it was. I'm like, hey, she goes, hey, you like my new car? I'm like, it's cool. It's like, I just got it. This is the first time I'm driving it. You want to take a ride? And I'm like, yeah. So we drive around, we get high, and then she drops me back off. And I saw Carl, you know, like that night. And I said, that's a cool car that Christy got. He's like, yeah, I haven't driven in it yet. Right, and I'm like, what?
Christy was a trip.
And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I haven't fucking gotten a ride. And I was like, he was all pissed off at me. And I'm like, oh no, what happened? Then Sam comes up to me. He puts his arm around me, walks me out in the parking lot. He goes, Marin, you never want to put a man in a position where he has to trust you.
Christy was a sweet lady, by the way, and from my point of view. I remember first time she was like, "Hey, you want to go get some weed?" And I was like, "Well, I'll." She goes, "Will you drive?" And I was like, "Well, all right." I just got into LA, right? And so she takes me to some terrible neighborhood. She's like, "Okay, slow the car down." And I'm like, "Why are we slowing down in this neighborhood?" Yeah. She's like, "No, just slow the car down."
Yeah, yeah.
Like, 20 people ran up to the car. I was like, "What the fuck?" She's like, "We're getting the weed. We're getting the weed." I was like, "Damn, you guys are on a different level than I am."
That was before Nick Arrow. Remember Nick?
Yeah.
But you've always loved the weed.
No, you know what? Not really. When I first got
really?
Here, I really wasn't. I was pretty, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Because when I first started doing stand-up, I was a stripper, and like I just knew, don't ever do drugs or anything like that. You know, so
to alter it so you stay.
Yeah, so it was, nowhere. Yeah. So, all right, so let's
yeah, okay.
take a all vote. Right. What is your right. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, mine's Eric Clapton. I don't think Eric Clapton.
Do you
Eric
think
Clapton
the first
is
part is a lie?
Not the whole thing. The Eric Clapton piece is the big lie within
but
part one.
So then in essence, yeah, that, sure. yeah part
yep.
one.
Yep.
I think part two is a lie. I just don't like the door. I can't get past that. I'm sorry.
I think part two is a lie because I can't imagine that Mark would say, hey, let's go do my coke.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
You know,
that's
I think.
Good.
It's interesting. Very, that's very nuanced.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the second part is the lie. Sorry, Mark.
All right. This is the part where you tell us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Hell yeah.
Damn.
In all fairness, though, he did show. Well, I did the hand thing, but down here, he showed up with Phil Collins one night, but we did not play guitar. He did not come.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Damn. You still got it. You tricked us girls. Wow. Sweet. Wow.
Should have went with that because he even started off with, oh, Felicia should know this.
Yeah.
He said that. He said that.
What? Yeah. So what do you mean? So
and I even said, I don't have no memory of Clapton really like partying.
Yeah. I think he came once.
Yeah.
Nugent was here a couple times. I remember one time in Mitzi's booth, I saw Ted Nugent. Rodney Dangerfield and Bruce Willis are all sitting in that booth.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like they didn't come together, but like that's where the special treatment was. You know, those guys, they're going to hang out with.
Bruce Willis would come all the time. Yeah. He was a big fan here.
Tarantino comes now.
Yeah,
he does.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
This was a blast.
And, yeah.
Thank you, Jessica.
I hope I did the thing.
Enough to ask him.
did I do it right?
You did.
Did
you
correctly?
You did.
Well, luckily, I used to work phones, so I had Mark's phone number.
Okay.
I worked phones too.
Struck fear in everyone's heart on that. I worked phones for one day, as I said.
How I worked phones. You? I did. I worked. She made me head doorman pretty quickly. So I had it was so fucked up because she was opening a comedy store franchise over at Universal City. And I was head door guy. She's like, you got to get everyone jackets. So I'm like running around trying to find black blazers for Mitchell Shane, Jay Pope. who else was
nice
it?
Man.
Mike Jaselka. Who were the guys?
Mike
Rodney.
Mike Jaselka's a lawyer.
I know, in Cleveland.
Yeah, and then he got in trouble.
He did?
I don't know. Google it.
Okay. He still kind of did.
Allegedly.
He still kind of did comedy, too, though. Yeah, I mean, because I saw him in Cleveland once.
He was funny, yeah.
He was all right. He was
is
okay.
there one person from back in the day that you think, God, it's so crazy they didn't make it or anything like that? Because it is amazing. Like, when Don Barris and I, other than when you're in the club, sometimes we look at each other like, can you believe we're the last two old fucks standing here out of everyone that started in our group?
That was what was so great about that 50th anniversary. Like, there were some guys that came to that thing that not only were they there when I was a door guy, but they were guys I never knew, but I know their pictures. So, like, I don't think anyone has been more excited to see Bruce Baum than I was the night.
Oh, my God. I had him on my show, Age Against Machine, and he did the same jokes he'd been doing for a long time.
Of course.
He killed.
Oh, the guy with the hair?
Yeah.
Killed. He looked like Steven from the guy from Crosby.
Crosby's.
Yeah.
He just died. But, that's weird. They're so dug in, those bits. Yeah. Oh, but...
But he killed, man.
But
he
also,
he did.
When people come around, I mean, like, for some reason, like, one time I was hanging around here and Lou Dino showed up just to walk, and no one knows who that guy is, but I was like, Lou Dino. He's like, you know me, and I'm like, I do. Your picture. Yeah. You know, like, they're so excited that somebody... Yeah. But there was a great moment, though, like, Bill Kennison came walking up into that parking lot with his wife. And he sees me. He's like, hey, Maren. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, no one's around anymore. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, what are you doing here?
I started my show, Age Against the Machine, after that night because...
That he showed up here?
And the night of the 50th anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it's such a crazy thing to see all these old comics whom you... have either great memories or, you know, like weird memories, but that you still love seeing and that they have a hard time, you know, talking to the new comics or even getting in the club sometimes because...
Yeah, I always make sure they get in and take care of you.
That's exactly right.
I had to, there was a couple of times where I had to cross check who people were by running and finding their picture.
Yes.
But it was weird, you know, like I was driving over here and there's a couple things that like that stung me. Like I was remembering like
I've gotten into it.
Like when I was door guy, you know, I had, you know, a certain cockiness, you know, because you think you're something and you don't know all these old guys. And when I first got here, you know, Majid was driving Alan Stevens' sports car for some reason for a long time. And then Alan was on the
probably
road.
Probably owed him money.
Oh, is that probably right? But I remember me and Schubert went to pick Alan Stevens up at the airport and driving to his house. And like a week or so later, you know, I'm at the back bar and Alan was there and he was getting a drink and I busted his balls or something. He's like, "What, we're fucking friends now because you picked me up at the airport?" And it's like, wow.
Damn.
But I kind of remember like, you know, like, all right.
Yeah.
Guess not.
I took a long time off of comedy and then I came back. And the weird things that struck me about the Comedy Store is in the sacred spot in the very back.
Yeah. Yes. It's destroyed right now.
Oh, it is?
Because they got hill? The mud. Yeah, mudslide.
Oh. But they had made seating there and everything. And I always say to everyone, it's so weird that things have changed at the Comedy Store because we used to have to stand up and do our drugs.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? There was no cushions.
No room back
no
there.
No light back there.
No room, no lights. Just someone with a pipe.
Yeah. Or the very back bar. That wasn't a bar.
No, that was a video. It was a room that never got used.
Yeah.
It was Polly's office for a while. And then there's all the offices upstairs, man.
So many. I've cleaned every bathroom in this place.
Yeah. And then they closed off the green room from the rest of the place, I guess, because someone was fucking with things. It used to be open up there, you know, like where the phones were. They put that wall there to make the green room separate because they let too many you know, street people in to do open mics. So I guess someone got into shit, so they built a wall there. But it used to be all kind of open up there.
Well, and people get just ballsy, though, because I've had some guy that was just crazy open micer and was back there talking to Bobby Lee and all of them saying, "Oh, well, can I get on stage?"
Yeah.
So they came and got me. I went in there and I was like, "Dude, you need to get the fuck out of here."
I know. They come get you when your shit goes down. Not the big door guys. They come get Jessica because she'll say anything to
anybody. Well, it's so good that there's security now because we just had to rely on fucking comics. It was crazy.
Yeah.
They don't want to, like, you know, it's not. They didn't sign up to clean up puke and stop fights. You know, it was chaos.
We still clean up puke.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, thank you for joining us, Mark. What are you up to? Do you have anything you want to share? Obviously, your special.
The special on
Where
HBO.
Can people watch that?
It's called From Bleak to Dark.
Okay.
I love it.
Okay. Sounds like you.
Yeah. Well, it was actually, it's a funny story because I had sold a show to FX with my buddy Sam. And, you know, they'd wanted a second script and, you know, it's not happening, but we wrote the story for the second script and we're doing a notes call, with the Fox executive, FX executives. Nick Grad is the head of development. There's a bunch of people on the Zoom meeting and he goes, you know, it's a good script, man. It's a good story. I love it, but, no specific notes, but is there any way we can get it from bleak to dark?
Okay.
So, I just thought, like, that's the best description of me ever.
Yeah.
Like, that's what
that's great.
Yeah. And when is it premiering?
11th. February 11th.
All right.
And you can't air this till after the 8th.
I got to talk.
Till after the 8th. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I made a promise to Vulture. Not that you guys aren't big time.
I thought you wanted people to watch your special, but that's all right.
We'll just bleep it now whenever he says the name. We'll just bleep the name of this book.
All right. And David, what do you have shaken that you would like people to know about?
Just a lot of shows coming up. DavidCSmalley.com, David C. Smalley on TikTok. I'm David C. Smalley everywhere.
Okay, great. I am Felicia Michaels. You can find me all across the board at Felicia Michaels. Do me a big favor. If you're going to come to the Comedy Store and you see a flyer for Age Against the Machine, fucking buy a ticket. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it's all 106-year-olds. I mix it up with everybody, but there you go.
I'm at Jess Wellington 2 on everything. Please follow me. And you have been lied to.